Welcome to the Herd Health Podcast, a convenient place where you can stay up to date on the dairy and beef cattle industry in Canada. With information shared from our technical services veterinarian team, we aim to bring producers, ranchers, and veterinarians relevant insights on trends, management practices, and science that can be applied in the field. This podcast is brought to you by the cattle team at Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health Canada, a leader in the animal health industry. You can find episodes of our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for joining us, everyone, for our next episode of the Herd Health Podcast. With us again is Dr. Herman Barkema, and today he will be discussing with us some of the ongoing research with antimicrobial stewardship that he is involved with here in Canada. Welcome, Herman.
Thank you, Phil.
Now, to change slightly our conversation here, I think listeners would find it useful to help them understand a little bit about how we measure antibiotic use. So can you describe a little bit about how that gets done from a research standpoint and then how Canada's use compares over time?
So use of antibiotics, and you will hear me say antimicrobials, but that you can use that interchangeably typically, is measured in all kind of different ways. We have done what we call garbage can audits, where we put a garbage can on the farm, and then farmers throw in the empty injectors, empty other vehicles that the antibiotics are in, and then we measure what antimicrobial use is. Now, that's all nice, but you cannot do that on all farms in Canada. So we are now looking more to measure the on-farm, to get an idea of the farm-level use of antibiotics by measuring the sales, by getting the sales data from the veterinarian to this farm. Now, that, of course, only works if a farm doesn't have four or five veterinary clinics that serve it. Now, that's in the dairy industry, that is typically not the case. A dairy farm typically has one veterinary clinic where they purchase their antibiotics. So that works very well, actually, in the dairy industry, with the assumption that all these antibiotics are actually used, of course, and that it's not possible anymore to buy antibiotics over the internet, which was the case a couple of years ago. So this is a very good way of looking at that. It's not possible with all other commodities, all other types of farms. With feedlots, we see typically more clinics involved, not always, but we need to really make sure that we monitor the use there. In countries outside Canada, like I mentioned, India, Pakistan, whatever, they can buy the antibiotics wherever they want to get them. So that is very difficult measuring the use of antibiotics that way. But like in a country like Denmark or Sweden, the Scandinavian countries, veterinarians cannot even sell antibiotics to dairy farms. They, like with humans, they make a prescription, and then the farmer goes to a pharmacy, and that's where they get the antibiotics from. Well, that's a lot more work. I'm not so sure whether we want to go there and whether we need to go there. So there it is, quite easy, actually, to get the records. So if you look over time, what was your other question?
I was wondering how Canada's antibiotic use compared over time when we've started measuring things on farm.
Yeah, so it really depends what group of animals that you look at. We now have about a third of the farms in Canada already doing selective dry cow treatment. So that has decreased, the use of antibiotics at drying off has decreased quite a bit. Also, if you look at antibiotics, you need to look also at what antibiotics. We have different classes of antibiotics. And the most important from a public health perspective is the group one. The class one antibiotics, those are the ones that are very important for human health. Quebec has actually restricted severely the use of those antibiotics in livestock. The other provinces, that's not the case. But so, the most frequently used antibiotic in dairy cattle, heifer mastitis, ceftiofur, is actually falls in that group one. Yeah, so we have work to do on that if we want to restrict the use of the class one antibiotics.
To just for the listeners that maybe aren't familiar with the molecule ceftiofur, to give you some examples, it's products such as XNL, Exceed, Spectromast, those types of things that would be involved with that molecule ceftiofur.
Yeah.
There was a time in practice in my early years where that was part of a program, actually, was putting cows with fevers on that molecule. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we need, from a public health perspective, I think that what has been done actually in Quebec, I applaud that.
Yeah. We had a vet from a clinic that we had on for another two podcasts that we've recorded, sharing their experience with how that has worked for them in their practice. And it was quite an eye-opening experience, both for me as a veterinarian, as well as putting myself in the shoes of the dairy farmers that were involved in his clinic, that it was very interesting to see some really positive outcomes with the strategy they used.
Yeah. And you know, it's not just Quebec that works on that. I mean, Dairy Farmers of Canada actually is quite active in regarding the awareness of dairy farmers on antimicrobial use and resistance. So we are the states right now that we, I'm part of the biosecurity committee and also of the antimicrobial resistance group of Dairy Farmers of Canada, and of making dairy farmers aware of the problems with antimicrobial resistance and the opportunities that we have as a dairy industry. Because we are actually in a very good situation, having decreased the bulk tank somatic cell count quite a bit. And there's a lot happening in the dairy industry, very proactive in that way.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of reaching out to various provinces to do talks with producers, and I like looking up the provincial somatic cell count and bacteria counts in the various provinces, and very, very promising to see that every province is able to stay under 200,000 almost across the board throughout the year, which is, in my opinion, pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. We first only had British Columbia being there. Yeah, because of the bonus program that they had, and they were very active in there, a front runner in the dairy industry in that regard. While 10 years ago, Quebec was the lagger there, and that's where the Canadian Bovine Mastitis Research Network started, and they caught up very, very rapidly, actually, with research, but also a lot of communication with the dairy farmers, and they are now on par. Yeah, with the other provinces, and doing great effort. And we see a similar picture all over Canada. The West is still a bit lower than the center and the East, but the differences are not huge anymore.
That's right. Looking at the Canadian dairy industry specifically, then, if we make changes to our antimicrobial use, how do we know if it's going to make a difference in the bigger Canadian picture then with respect to antimicrobial resistance?
I would look at this more from the prevention angle than really fixing something with antimicrobial resistance. If we now use less antibiotics, we won't get in the problems that countries like China, India, Brazil are in. And we also give a very good signal to our consumers on that. And we protect our families. with there. So that, I think that's something we really need to realize, that the dairy families are, if you use it in cows, that's transmitted to the people that work with dairy cattle. So I would like to prevent that we get there, and also give a very good signal to our consumers that we care about them, and also because the use is not needed anymore. We have fixed a lot in the last 50 years in the developed dairy countries.
Are you saying we don't need them at all, or just need them to be used strategically?
No, we need them. I swear an oath as a veterinarian, as you did, Phil, that we really need to protect and cure an animal, try to cure an animal that is sick. And I want to keep the right to use antibiotics in animals. As a veterinarian, but also as a dairy farmer, we need to give a sick animal the best treatment possible. So that should still be the case, also by giving that signal that we are respectable, good users of antibiotics. There won't come any regulations to the dairy industry that we will be restricted too much in the use of antibiotics. So yes, antibiotics was a very important invention, and it actually is. That's only from the 1920s that we have penicillin, and we really need to make sure that we can keep using it in our dairy industry.
So if I was to summarize our discussion to this point, Herman, the message is antibiotics are important, and we want to keep their ability to treat sick animals. And in order to do that, it would be important for the dairy industry to consider adjusting how we use antibiotics in mastitis treatment, for one. Two, and what's in it for the dairy farmer is less antibiotics purchased, less milk out of the bulk tank for treated cows, and helping with the health of their family in the long term with respect to antibiotic resistance. And I guess in the broader picture, their duty to helping society at a larger sense, I guess, in general with antibiotic resistance.
Correct.
Moving on to your research experience now, Herman, I'd like you to talk about Alberta's experience with research revolving around animals and people.
My research portfolio, or the research I've done in the last 35 years, has focused particularly on infectious diseases in dairy cattle, and we have a large focus on mastitis, Joni's disease, and other diseases, but also on humans, and a lot of my graduate students actually also work in human health, and then I work a lot with people in other countries. I try to help these other countries to tackle infectious diseases from a prevention perspective. So I work with China. I have been 23 times in China, Pakistan, lot with the Africa. I work with Brazil, Chile, and so a lot of countries where we need a good education of veterinarians and of veterinary researchers, and also good projects done on farm on prevention of infectious diseases. Because the best way to prevent the use of antibiotics is actually prevent that animals get sick. And so a country like China, the researchers typically work in their laboratories and don't go to farms. So since I've started there, I've taken the graduate students and the researchers to farms. We have given seminars to dairy farmers, dairy veterinarians there. And a very exciting event that happened last year was that we got the managers of the 15 largest dairy companies in the country together, where we talked about antimicrobial resistance, mastitis. Yeah, we had them talking with each other, and you know, and these farms can be so large. The largest farm, dairy farm in China, has 400,000 cows. Okay? And so these 15 people represented 25% of the dairy industry in China. And as a result of that, we've started doing selective dry cow treatment and selective treatment of clinical mastitis trials on the farms that actually can do that. So that's one research part. But of course, I do a lot of research in Canada. Yeah, I've been an NSERC industrial research chair that was financed for 50% by Dairy Farmers of Canada on infectious diseases in dairy cattle.
Can I stop you there, Herman, just briefly? You mentioned the acronym NSERC. Can you just share with the listeners what that entity is?
So NSERC is the research funder of the federal government for energy but also for animal health. And, I'm also funded by CIHR, and that is the for human health only. So that is really siloed in Canada, unfortunately. But the NSERC is the and they have more than $1 billion in per year in funding for. For veterinary medicine, but also engineering, science, these kind of things.
Yeah, so thank you. And continue on then with describing some of the projects you have on the go here in Canada.
Yeah, so we work with the dairy cluster. We're now in the fourth round of the 5 years, which is a five-year program of Dairy Farmers of Canada and agriculture and agri-food Canada. We have a project in there on selective use of antibiotics. You know, we are in a very fortunate situation in Canada that the dairy researchers in Canada all get along and collaborate. So the projects that I've had were always with people of the University of Montreal in St. Hyacinthe, with Guelph, with the Atlantic Vets College, with Western College in Saskatoon and with UBC. So we all work together, also with the people working at the Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada research stations on research. So these projects that we have, they're typically led by one of the institutions, but the others in the country, they work with us, and then we have a group of graduate students and researchers that come together, we look together at the results that we have and what more research is needed, and then we communicate in our regions what the results are. So this is a nice study on selective use of antibiotics at drying off and clinical mastitis with farms in Eastern Canada, you know, Ontario, Quebec, and Western Canada. So that's a big one that we do. Then we have what we call the CHESS, which is a surveillance in Alberta. And we actually identified the Salmonella Dublin, which is really an emerging bacterium in Canada, is way more frequently found in the south of our provinces than in the north. We don't know why. Of course, we like to point at our neighbors south of the border, but we don't have really a proof for that. So, and we found Neospora, the most important cause of abortions, in the north. And then we also had outbreaks of mycoplasma. Mycoplasma causing mastitis, arthritis, lung problems. And we saw a lot of these diseases less frequently at Hutterite farms than at other farms. So what is so special about Hellright farms, apart from the culture and religion? That's one thing that we want to look at as well. And we also want to look at the regional distribution. So we recently got funding for Salmonella Dublin and collaborate again with the people in Ontario, Quebec, Atlantic Canada and BC on Salmonella Dublin. And we're waiting for the results of Neospora for funding. But we also recently got approval to look into mycoplasma. Hey, why does one herd get mycoplasma and why does another herd not get it? Why does it affect particularly the calves with joint problems in one farm? Why do we see more respiratory problems in another farm and more mastitis in another farm? Is that because we see different kind of mycoplasmas there, different genetically, different types of the bacteria or not? So those are some of the projects that we do. We also looked a lot at what we now call the non-aureus staphylococci causing mastitis. Formerly they were used, were called the coagulase negative staphylococci. They have become, with the lower somatic cell count, more and more important. We've done a lot of research on that. We're actually the world leader in that, together with Ghent University in Belgium, I must say. Yeah, what other... we do a lot of research on communication. Yeah, so... how do you communicate to veterinarians and farmers and the public also that things need to change? Yeah, when we have a message on that antimicrobial use should be decreased, how do you convince farmers and veterinarians that that's actually the case? And traditionally, people try to convince veterinarians and farmers with economic figures. And I would say nearly fortunately, money is not really what drives people always. Yeah? If we have enough to live off, then economics are not always the driver behind doing certain things on a dairy farm. Yeah? There are a lot of other things behind that. So we work a lot on that as well. Yeah, and then Joni's disease research, which is not a topic of this podcast, but we've done a lot on that, on the role of calves in that.
Yeah, you mentioned communication, and as veterinarians, it's critical how things are communicated to clients, right? We want to make changes, and it's often overlooked as to how important a factor it is as far as a barrier to facilitating change at the farm level. So it's good to see that there's ongoing research with respect to communication as well.
The ones of us that are married, they know the way your wife tells you on how to do things makes a difference on whether we follow that up or not. Yeah? And at least that
this
works for
true.
Me. Maybe not for the listeners, but that's for me, it is important. So, but, you know, and just give another example. You know, 20 years ago, it was not common practice to use gloves at milking. Yeah? And bacteria were then with the... yeah, the rough hands that farmers often have, there were bacteria on, those were transmitted from cow to cow. So in the Netherlands, they did a campaign on that, also with the milk processors, and they found out the best way to convince a farmer was having a hand, having that was then St. Nicholas, the Dutch saint, but think of Santa for the people that are not used with, and they put his hand there with a glove, and you know, even Saint Nicholas wears gloves, yeah, and that was the best way of actually they had the best result in to convince farmers there. So yeah, it's, you know, we are interesting animals as humans, and yeah, it's
the clinic in Quebec that I had chatted with Dr. Frederick Tremblay about, their experience from a communication standpoint was that he created a database with a whole bunch of information from the farm level and put it together in an anonymous format and posted it in the clinic as far as what each farm's antibiotic use was, and didn't say anything else, just left it on the wall and each farm knew what number they were on the list, but nobody else knew who's anybody else's numbers were. And that was a very powerful piece to how they implemented the change within their practice, because everyone saw where they related to everyone else, and it just started them asking more questions around what this meant.
Yeah, it's, you know, I once did a talk when I was still in the Netherlands, and I talked about biosecurity, yeah, and the role of, and I told them diseases are bought and paid for. Yeah, when you buy an animal, you have a high risk of bringing in disease, because no farmer sells their best cows. Yeah, and right. So then there was a question, and then this guy stood up, this farmer, and he said, "Well, it's all nice what you talk, what you say, but I always buy these cows that farmers don't want to have, and that's where I live off, and I make a good living off that." So then I asked, "So what do your neighbors think of that? Because you're a source of infection for your neighbors." Yeah, and in the Netherlands, the neighbor of a farmer, typically in the rural areas, is a farmer. Yeah, so these farms are very connected with each other. And well, that made him think. And I thought that I destroyed the relationship with this farmer forever. But in the break, he came to me and he said, "Herman, who throws the ball can expect it to get it back." I said, "Wait, no, you're a good guy."
Yeah. That's good. To finish up then with the research discussion here, is there some specific projects you have trying to uncover or find some answers around how antimicrobial resistance or antibiotic resistance is transferred to cities?
Yeah. So we recently got funding for a project where we monitor water runoff of dairy farms, the aquifers, the brooks, and then the rivers, and then also in the cities, the rivers there, but also the wastewater of hospitals and the patients, and we're going to compare all that. So because we actually think that this is the most important route, but we are not sure. So that's a project that we are doing with my colleagues in the Cummings School of Medicine and people in engineering, and also with a company that makes those samplers. So these samplers are placed in the water, and they take samples every couple of hours. And these samples are stored, and then the samplers are collected every now and then and are examined. I find that a very exciting project, because whatever the outcome is, we will know how this goes.
That does sound very interesting, Herman. And it's encouraging to hear about all the ongoing research involving the various components of antibiotic resistance here in Canada. So thanks again, Herman, for your time today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you about this important topic. And thank you for listening today, everyone.
So thank you so much for having me on this podcast. It has been a pleasure, Phil, talking with you on these topics that are, as you may have noticed, quite close to my heart.
You've been listening to the Herd Health Podcast. The information shared in this podcast does not replace the advice of a veterinarian. We encourage you to reach out to your veterinarian for more information about the topics discussed. Boehringer Ingelheim cannot recommend the use of products outside of the Canadian product approved labeling. Find more episodes of this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks again for listening.